This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. So welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm here with Karen and Marima. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
And today we're going to discuss a couple different things. We're going to talk about Comic-Con, which all of us just got back from. So scratchy voices and tired bodies aside, we're going to talk about that today. And then we're going to talk about our latest book club book, which is The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. So that'll be pretty exciting. So, but first, we're going to talk about what we're reading right now. So Karen, what are you reading right now?
Well, I just finished Under the Empyrean Sky by Chuck Wendig, and that was really good. I really liked it. And now I'm reading Skin by Donna Jo Napoli. And my friend said it was okay. She didn't really like it. So I'm kind of worried that it's not going to be quite as good as I thought it was going to be.
Okay. And Marima, what are you reading right now?
Well, I've just been traveling, so I've been doing lots of reading on planes and things. So I did just read The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith / J.K. Rowling. And I also read Insurgent for the first time by Veronica Roth, which was fun. I don't know why I hadn't got around to that before. And right now I just started the new edition of Terry Pratchett's The Carpet People, which Jen very nicely brought to Comic-Con for me. And I'm very excited about, and which is great because he basically has rewritten the book that he published when he was like 18 years old, like 30 years ago. And so it's apparently really different, and I'm really excited to see how it is.
Well, that's awesome. I didn't realize that. I just picked it up at the time thinking someone would like Terry Pratchett. So it's like, oh yeah, I'll take one of those. So I'm glad.
Yay.
You're excited about it. I'm reading, or I just finished, I should say, Unbreakable by Cami Garcia. And it doesn't come out till October, but it's a really, really good book. It's kind of like Supernatural, the TV show, mixed with a little, like, Buffy, not like vampires, but the character kind of combinations from Buffy and things like that. It's really a fast, enjoyable read. It's basically about these teens who are part of a group that's called the Legion that they didn't necessarily know about, and they go out and have to kill, like, demons and poltergeists and hauntings and super cool stuff like that. I really enjoyed it. And that's actually all I've read lately because I've been a little busy with running around at Comic-Con and stuff, so there wasn't a whole lot of time to read, unfortunately. Oh, that's not true. I just finished also, silly me, Infinity Glass by Myra McIntyre, which is the last book in her Hourglass series, and that is also very enjoyable. And it's a little different from the other two novels because it's actually told from two people's point of view. Okay, so right now we're going to do our Book Bite segment, and for this week of Book Bites, we're going to talk all about Comic-Con, because actually the entire Book Hype podcast people were all at Comic-Con this week. Two of them clearly have not recovered. Didn't make the show today. No, that's not true. They all have stuff to do. But the rest of us have made it, and so we're going to talk about Comic-Con and all the really cool stuff that happened there with authors and adaptation panels, because I think we've all been to at least one of those and stuff, which is really cool. So let's talk about adaptation panels first, because I think those are always like a big hit, and it's always cool to see what's coming out. And there are a lot of adaptations at Comic-Con this year. So, Marima, you saw the Ender's Game panel and the Divergent panel. Do you want to talk about those a little bit and what you thought and some of the footage that you saw?
Sure. Well, yeah, they had a joint panel in Hall H. That was on Thursday. And it was very exciting because they had all of the cast for both of them there. And for both of them, they showed new footage. For Divergent, it was the first footage that we'd seen. So that was really cool. And I know that lots of people are a little bit wary of Shailene Woodley, but I can say, having seen the footage, she's going to be awesome. It's going to be really great. And I'm way more excited for this movie than I was before. So they showed the footage of her basically entering Dauntless and when she jumps on the train, and then they showed the entire scene when she has to jump off the roof to get into the building, which was really great. And then we see when she meets Four, and he's really attractive. So I feel like they got that casting down. Jen will be pleased to hear that.
Thank you. I think she's a big fan. Because you were so opposed to that first. You're like, no, no. And I'm like, no, yes, yes, I promise.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's cute, so that's fine. He didn't say anything almost in the whole footage, but I don't care. That's fine.
Exactly.
So that was basically the Divergent panel, because I didn't have a lot of time. And then for Ender's Game, they showed a new trailer that they'd put together, which focused a lot on the battle school and the simulators and things that they use there. If people have read the book, they know what I'm talking about. And that looked really cool, and they had all the special effects in there, lots of explosions and lots of spacey things. And that was actually the part of the book that I was most skeptical about them adapting, and it looks like they've done a really great job with it. And we got to see little glimpses of all of the cast, and they focused a lot on Harrison Ford as Colonel Graf, and it looks like he's going to be maybe more overtly manipulative than he is in the book, because the people who have read the book know that he kind of manipulates Ender into becoming this soldier that he needs. But lots of those scenes in the book, Ender isn't present for, and it looks like they've kind of spun it in the movie, so he's telling Ender these things instead of them being sort of behind the scenes, which I think is a really cool, like, addition to the story. And I like that they've sort of taken it in that direction, because it just changes it up a little bit. So, yeah, I'm a huge Ender's Game fan, as these girls know. I get way too excited, so I'm really excited for that one as well. Maybe more so than Divergent, but they both look really cool.
And didn't you guys do the Ender's Game experience that was at Comic-Con?
Yeah, we did. We went through that. Mm-hmm.
What was in that?
In that, they had a lot of the costumes, and they also had the original sets that they filmed at. So most of that stuff was things from the battle school, and what was really funny is they had it set up. The students, I guess, have these little consoles where they sit at these tables and do simulations and whatever, and they were all iPads. So, like, I guess Apple is sponsoring Ender's Game or something, like, I have no idea. But that was really funny, because we were going through and we were like, wait a second. And, yeah, they had lots of the costumes and things as well, which was really cool, and they had all these, like, funny photo ops where you could pretend to be in space, so we did that, and that was fun. Before we continue, today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Book Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you the chance to try out their very helpful service. Today we are recommending The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, because it is actually by J.K. Rowling. And this is Rowling's new and very secret book. It's an English crime novel, so it's something very different from what we've seen her write before. And you should definitely check it out on Audible to give it a try. And then you'll be very prepared when we discuss it on Book Hype on one of our upcoming episodes. So again, visit audiblepodcast.com/bookhype to get an audiobook like The Cuckoo's Calling for absolutely free. And we thank Audible for their support of the show.
Okay, so Karen, what are some of the panels that you attended at Comic-Con? Did you do anything with books?
I didn't, actually. I was planning on doing that, but I really wanted to go to the Catching Fire panel, but I couldn't make it because Hall H, I knew, was going to be packed between that and the Marvel stuff. And so I actually didn't get a chance to, but I can say I've watched the trailer for Catching Fire like 300 times, and I'm really, really excited for it.
Me too.
Yeah, Hall H on Saturday was psychotic. Like, I don't know how, like, I think people started camping out literally at like 3 o'clock that day, because I was in Hall H on Friday afternoon for the Mortal Instruments, and when I left, there was already a line started. It was psychotic for Saturday. So yeah, I think the only person that got in from Hypeable was Andrew, because he had a pass. So yeah, he got to see Catching Fire and he covered that live. But other than that, the rest of us did not get into Hall H on Saturday because, yeah, it was crazy. But on Friday I did see the Mortal Instruments, which Whit made its first appearance at Comic-Con for the first book, City of Bones. And it had the cast. It had Jamie Campbell Bauer, Lily Collins, Robert Sheehan, Kevin Zegers, and Godfrey Gao, who it's his first kind of big appearance with fans, which is really cool. Godfrey plays Magnus Bane, so he's kind of a fan favorite, and I think everyone's really been dying to see him in an interview situation, because the only thing we've seen of him so far was a really brief thing in the beginning with MTV. So I think the panel went really well. It was a brief panel, it wasn't very long. And they showed the footage that I had actually already seen that footage, although they said it was a Comic-Con exclusive. It was footage that they had shown at a party at BEA in New York City. So for me, it wasn't new, unfortunately. But it was really good footage. And you get to see Lena Headey, like, kick some serious ass in the footage, which is awesome. So I'm really excited to see her role as Jocelyn in the movie, because she's coming off as a serious badass shadow hunter, which you don't really, like, you know she was in the book, but, like, you don't really get that sense that she's so kind of, like, good at it, because you just see her as Clary's mom. She's in, like, a different part of her life. She's not a shadow hunter anymore, so I'm excited about that. And the footage looked really good, and the cast was super comfortable on stage. Like, I've been to panels before where a young cast like this is on stage and they are terrified and don't know how to answer questions and it doesn't work well. This particular group did really well, and so I'm kind of excited to see that and to see how the movie turns out. And that movie comes out really, really soon. It comes out August 21st. So, like, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks.
Oh. That is really soon.
Yeah.
I just read those books. That's something else I've read.
Yeah. You liked them, didn't you, for the most part?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't mind them. They were, like, it's a pretty easy read, but they were kind of fun story.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Lena Headey was in it, though, and now I'm, like, way more excited.
Yeah,
because
she's
awesome.
She's Jocelyn. She's Claire's mom. And like I said,
she's going to kill that.
Yeah, she does. It's awesome. And I'm waiting for the moment when her and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers are together on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to be awesome as well.
I think the casting for that movie is, like, really great.
Yeah, it's actually really
because I checked it out once I read them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look really good. They chose them all really well.
It's this nice balance of kind of, like, newbie younger actors and, like, seasoned older actors, and it's just, I don't know, I really like it. Like, Jared Harris is playing Hodge, which is a really great choice. Like, it's just really balanced, so I'm excited to see what they do with
yeah
it.
It looks cool.
Yeah, and somewhat, like I said, from what I've
seen, wonder when that is
in Australia. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a fairly timely release for all, because it's a worldwide novel. Like, there are people, like, there are whole, like, TMI institutes in the Philippines, like, fan sites and everything, so it's a pretty worldwide known novel and everything, and it's pretty popular. So usually when that happens, they try to release them at similar times.
Oh, I just looked it up.
What is it?
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. I have to wait a whole day.
Not a whole day!
Which is basically actually the same day because
exactly.
Of the time.
Exactly. So see?
Nice.
That's actually really impressive. And it's
that's,
like,
yeah,
a day.
That actually never happens, but, you know, nice one, Mortal Instruments.
Yeah, they're not messing around. So I saw that panel, and it was really enjoyable. And actually, we will have some interviews from the cast, because we were allowed to interview Robert Sheehan, who plays Simon, and Godfrey Gao, who plays Magnus. And so those will come out on Hypeable later, closer to release day. Which will be fun, because they're really cool. And then what else did I do? I'm trying to think. It's all a blur now.
Well, what about something that I did? Let's talk about me.
Let's talk about you, Marima. What did you do?
I interviewed James Dashner when I was there about the Maze Runner film.
And that just reminded me, I saw the Maze Runner panel. Anyway, back to you.
And that was very exciting. And that interview will probably be up by the time this podcast is out. So you can go and check that out. He had heaps and heaps to say about the film. He's super excited. And he also talked about the possibility of maybe writing more Maze Runner books and, like, under what circumstances he would return to that. And he also talked a bit about his new book that's coming out. I think that one's in October. And we should have a giveaway of that, because he gave me a signed copy, which I passed on to Jen. So we'll have that closer to the release So watch out for that one.
Yes, The Eye of Minds comes out October 8th.
Exactly.
And now that you said James Dashner, it reminded me. I went to Nerd HQ, which is kind of like this separate entity from Comic-Con but goes on at the same time. And it's run by Zach Levi, who was Chuck, if you guys have seen that movie, or for, everyone else, he's Flynn Rider from Entangled. So he runs this whole thing called Nerd HQ, and basically they have these small panels. 250 people can get into the panel. That's it. They charge a flat fee, and that fee is actually all donated to charity, which is a really awesome thing. So you get to go see these really great panels in these really intimate settings, and all the money that you spent on it goes to charity. So, it's awesome. And I got to see the Maze Runner panel, and on the panel was James Dashner, Wick Godfrey, who's the producer, Dylan O'Brien, who's the star, and Wes Ball, who's the director. And it was amazing. I have to
I'm
say,
so jealous.
I don't think Dylan O'Brien knows what's coming for him.
No.
Like, in all seriousness, I don't think he understands. He was absolutely lovely and funny and really, really just kind to everyone in the audience. And, like, he was really enjoyable to watch on a panel. He was not uncomfortable in any way. And the girls were screaming like crazy for him. If you guys, we posted a report about it on Unhypeable, and I included the Nerd HQ video, and you can kind of see the whole panel. The one thing you cannot see is the footage that they actually showed, which is astounding. They only just finished filming like a week before Comic-Con ended, if that. And so what they did was they kind of snuck some footage into this panel. So the only people who have seen it were the people at that panel. And it was amazing. Like, it looks so good, you guys. Like, the costuming is right, the feel of the setting is right. Like, they showed you the overview of the maze. It looks amazing. So I think they actually really did a spectacular job. From what I've seen so far, it looked so good. And sometimes early footage is questionable. I don't usually have the, "Oh my God, it looks great" reaction the first time I see something, but there was something about this that it just looks so good. And the one thing I have to say is Wick Godfrey is, he's kind of like the ultimate YA adaptation kind of guy. He's done a lot of different adaptations in the last, 6 years. He clearly started on Twilight, and I think that's why a lot of people know his name. And he worked on all of the Twilight films. But he also picked up The Maze Runner. He's also working on The Fault in Our Stars. So he's picking up a ton of YA and making it into films. And he's doing it at a quick rate. Like, he's not messing around. I mean, they picked up The Fault in Our Stars a year and a half ago, and it's already going into production next, like, in a week. So I think it's really impressive at his ternary and how passionate he is about these projects. Whenever you hear him speak, he gets really, really excited. It's like he's just as much of a fan as the readers are. And I think that's why his adaptations turn out to be a little bit more truthful than some other people's, because he is very hands-on and he's very in it. And so I think that's really cool. And that panel was really great. We learned some cool information. And like I said, I'm not really sure Dylan O'Brien understands. Like, Teen Wolf is very popular. There's a huge fan base for it, and that's great. But with The Maze Runner, it's going to expose him to a whole nother audience that may not have any idea who he is. And I think it's going to be a very big deal for him. So I'll be excited to see where that goes. It comes out February 14th of 2014.
I'm really excited for that film. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it's
Yeah.
going to be,
I
so.
think it's it has the potential for it to be one of those ones where I like the movie more than the book. Not that I don't like the book, but I think the way he writes, it lends itself to be very cinematic. So I think it could just like it could come across even better visually. And I think he writes it kind of intentionally that way. So I'm really excited to see just like the maze and how everything is set up. It's like a movie already. So it'll be really cool.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I just finished The Maze Runner while we were at Comic-Con, actually. And not that I disliked the book, but it wasn't as like earth-shatteringly amazing as I thought it was going to be. But I'm really, really excited for the movie. And that could just be because I love Dylan O'Brien, but yeah, I think as a movie, like the source material does lend itself to becoming a movie. So I think it's going to be really action-packed and exciting.
I'm sorry, I would just like to note the time that Marima and Karen agreed on something, please, and thank you.
Okay, Karen agreed with me, not the other way around.
Oh, which really isn't out of the norm because.
All right, fine.
You'll have to do better than that, Jen.
Yeah, I tried. So what else did you guys do at Comic-Con? Was there anything else you saw or did? I actually have a, I know Mikal isn't here, but she did a ton of interviews for us at Comic-Con as well that we'll have coming out over the next couple of weeks. But it was so cute. It was Mikal's first time at Comic-Con. And so on preview night on Wednesday, we walked through the book section just to talk to some people and, you know, to catch up and we went to one of the booths. It was a Random House, I believe. All right, so Mikkel was looking for this one very specific book called The Republic of Thieves, and I guess it's been a while since this author has written a book. And so we're going around, walking around, and she's like, "Okay, do I ask for the book? Do I ask if I know they're supposed to have ARCs?" I'm like, "Just ask." I'm like, "It can't hurt to ask. If they say no, they say no. It's no big deal." So we're at the Delray booth, and she sees this lady, and she's like, "Excuse me, you know, are you going to have the book this week at all? When, you know, when do you know when you'll be putting them out so I could possibly get a copy?" And so the woman's like, "Oh, you want The Republic of Thieves?" And she's like, "Yeah, I would love a copy." And she's like, "Oh, okay. Hold on a second." And she turns around and goes in the back of like the booth and pulls one out of the box and hands it to her. I thought Mikhail was gonna like combust right then and there. She was so excited. And so she's talking to the one about the book and she's so excited and Mikhail's really little, you guys. Like you don't realize. She's like, I don't know, 5 feet tall. And so she's
She's
like,
tiny.
she's super tiny. And so she was like this little tiny powder keg of excitement over this book. And so she's talking to the woman. The woman's like, "Well, actually, I'm really excited about the book too because I'm his editor," which set her into this another fit of excitement. So the two of them stood there and were like profusely talking about the book and all its glory, and it was adorable. And she was just so excited. She's like, "I didn't know you could ask for books." I'm like, "You can always ask. They can always say no, but you can always ask." So she was super excited. And then we moved on to like the Macmillan booth, and she's been dying for a copy of Cress, which is almost impossible to get your hands on, by the way. So we were talking to them. And so she was talking to the lady at Macmillan, and she's like, "Well, I don't have a copy to give you now, but I'll mail you a copy. Do you have a card?" So sure enough, Mikhail managed to get supposedly a copy of Cress mailed to her as well. And again, there was the fit of excitement that burst from her. I've never seen her quite so excited about anything. But yeah, so
Yay.
Mikhail's first adventure at Comic-Con was very excitable, shall we say. And she got some really cool stuff.
Can I just say that I walked the exhibition floor like 3 times and I still didn't find the book section?
They were at the farthest end in the 100s.
Yeah, you had to go and like seek it out. But they were all together, so once you found it, it was like, oh, a little book haven.
Yeah, it was good. The funny part was is there were clearly people there who didn't know anything about like the books, but there was swag available, so they were just taking it, which I always find really amusing. I'm like, really? You don't even know what that's about. What are you doing? But yeah.
Oh yeah. There's like huge lines. And there was I don't want to say which publishing house it was from, but when I was walking past, I wanted to ask about something, and I must have asked at the section that was like the audiobook section. And the woman was like, "Oh, we don't know anything about that. We only do the audiobooks." And I was like, "Well, I mean, don't you still need to know what the books are about if you're releasing them?" And she was like, "Oh, no, like we don't deal with that." And I was like, "This is a very strange place." And she was like, you have to walk like 1 centimeter this way and then talk to that person next to me." I was like, "You are a weird person."
Or rude. She could just be called rude. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, yeah. So that was one of my book experiences, just to put a negative spin on it, as always.
It wouldn't be a show without that, Marima. Come
Ah,
on.
but I did come home with like 15 free books, so I mean, I didn't do too badly.
No. So now you have, and you'll have them long before they're out in Australia, so that'll be good.
Long before.
So yeah, so we also there are also a lot of author panels at Comic-Con. Unfortunately for me, all of the author panels were opposite things that I had to be doing, like the Doctor Who panel, or on Saturday there were a ton of panels, but I had Once Upon a Time and then Once Upon a Time roundtables. So there was no like happy balance, and that's the sad part about Comic-Con. Sometimes things overlap so much that you can't get to the things you want to do because there are other things that you have to do and want to do, and it's a little crazy. So I actually didn't get to any book panels. It's kind of sad.
Oh, but I went as your
You
representative.
did. You are amazing. So Maruma also covered the Ransom Riggs panel with I think Tahereh Mafi was on it as well.
There was heaps of people on it.
Yeah.
There was way too many authors on it, actually. Like, it's great to have them all represented, but they only got to say like five things each because they were trying to be polite and share it with each other,
Yeah.
which was cute, but at the same time you were like, just say something. That was the What's Hot in YA Fiction panel, and it had Ransom Riggs and Rainbow Rowell and all these great authors. And there's a recap of that on Hyperbole if people want to check that out. That was fun. That was on Sunday. And we actually live tweeted that from the Book Hype Twitter, so you may have seen that also.
Good times, good times.
And we should
Overall,
also, well,
huh?
we should. I was just going to say, while we were talking about adaptations, people always get mad that we forget to mention it. Sherlock also had a panel, and we covered that, and they talked a lot about the new season and which particular stories they are focusing on. So we haven't forgotten about it again, and we're really sorry that we forgot about it last time.
But see, to me, Sherlock is such a different adaptation from everything else we're talking about. Like
It
it's
is, but
so
it,
different. It's not the same
yeah.
at all, really.
No, I know, but like people get upset, and I'm trying to be nice, so just let me go with it. It doesn't happen often.
Right, just this once. The Sherlock
Yeah.
panel was actually really cool because there was some great footage they showed, and it brought Cumberbatch's awkwardness level up like to a whole different level from the scene that they showed, and it was awesome. And there was also a great introduction from because Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman couldn't be there, so they each sent in like a little video clip saying, sorry, I can't be there and stuff. And Benedict's is actually up on Hypable because it's hysterical. He thinks he's there for Star Trek, and then he thinks he's there for, The Hobbit, and it goes on and on. And then it's super enjoyable. So go check
Wow.
that out.
I need to find this.
It's,
I didn't see
oh my
that.
God, it's hysterical. So, and then he like decides that, oh, well, I'm on vacation. I'm just gonna tell you what happened at the end of last season and how it all works out. So he pulls out these stuffed monkeys. And starts role playing what happens in the last scene of the last, and it's like cutting out and stuff. It's hysterical. You guys have to check it out. And anyway, so I guess that about wraps up our book Comic-Con experience. And yeah, so now we'll actually get into the book discussion for this episode, which is all about The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. And we know lots and lots and lots of you have read this book. So, we don't have to go into too much detail about everything because you already know it all, my lovely readers. So let's talk first of all about our overall thoughts of the book. Is it a buy it or a borrow it for you guys? Marima, why don't you go first?
I think it's a buy it. It's very well written, and it's really funny, and it's a good story. I think probably it's not a book for everyone, but it is the kind of book that a lot of readers would enjoy. I think there's sort of a universal quality to it. So I think if you buy it, there's a fairly good chance that you're going to read it and enjoy it. You might not love it the way that some people love it, but it's not the kind of book that you read it and hate. So, yeah, it's a fairly good investment book, I would say.
And Karen?
I would definitely say buy it. I loved this book. I think the material, it's about cancer victims, and that can be kind of tough sometimes, especially if you know somebody who has suffered from cancer. So it's not exactly, I hesitate to call it an enjoyable book just because of that. But yeah, like Marima said, it's really well written. It's really, really funny, and I loved it, so I would definitely say buy it.
I'm gonna say borrow it, even though the funny part is I actually own a copy of The Fault in Our Stars. And here's why. I'm not sure this is a book for people going into it that they know what they're getting into. Even from the description on the outside, I think John Green's writing is very stylistic in a sense. It hits a certain group of people, but it isn't necessarily enjoyed by everybody. I think he's a strong writer. I think his writing is, you know, impressive and that it does what it needs to do, but I'm not sure that it appeals or would appeal to all readers. And that's like with most authors. It doesn't appeal to all readers. Like for me, I understood the book. I didn't love the book. It was just, I read it. It was good. The writing was solid, but it's not something I'm like, oh my God, and raving about. So for me, it would be a borrow it. So let's discuss, and we kind of just touched on it a little bit, about the plot. The plot is it's very sad in a lot of ways, but I guess you guys know that going into it when you read the back of the book. So the plot is basically about these teens who have cancer. I mean, and it goes a little bit more than that, but that's kind of the first thing that you get hit with at first. So in a sense, it's a book about dying and dying young. So what did you guys think about that? Did you get anything else from the initial description on the book about the plot, how did you feel about it? And overall, did you think the plot moved quickly? Was it appropriate? Did it drag at all for you?
I went into this book not knowing a whole lot about it. I knew, you know, the very basic back cover description of it. I expected it to be really, really tragic, and it was. But I did not expect it to be so funny. That really took me by surprise. And I think the plot moved along really quickly. And it didn't drag for me at all. I finished it fairly quickly. I mean, it's not a super long book, but I was kind of sucked into it right away. And I finished it really quickly.
Yeah, I think despite the subject matter, it's a pretty quick read. The plot sort of moves along pretty steadily, and it's kind of a book where even though a lot of like huge sort of life-changing things happen, at the same time not a lot happens. It's like a very focused look at the lives of these characters, I guess. And the first time I read it, I remember thinking how funny it was, and that's what I like really took away from it. And this time, probably because of like extenuating circumstances, I looked at what I noticed more was the sort of, I guess, the sadder side of it. And I think it's the kind of book where you really do bring your own life experiences to it because of the subject matter, and because of the way that it deals with things like, you know, life and death and like being remembered and all these kinds of things. They're like these huge big picture ideas, and he can only address them so much because it's kind of a shorter book. And so I think when you're reading it, you sort of imprint your own things onto it. And that was very interesting to me reading it the second time because I got a lot out of it that I didn't the first time.
Very interesting. So let's get into kind of a character discussion because this is a very character-driven book. We first have Hazel, and Hazel is our narrator. And for all intents and purposes, Hazel is basically living the last time frame of her life because she's got stage 4 cancer. So there's not really a cure for that. And so this is how we're introduced to Hazel. She's made to go to a support group, and this is where she meets Gus, who is kind of a very different character from Hazel in a lot of ways, and not so different at the same time. So what did you guys think about our main characters, Hazel and Gus?
I mean, they're sort of not really real teenagers, are they?
Like, no, and that's the I'm vibe, not that. Yeah, that's the vibe I I'm, get from yeah. them too.
I'm not that far off from being a teenager. Let's just like put it that way. It's like only a few years ago. Kids don't really talk like that, so that's fine. I think a lot of John Green's characters are that very sort of precocious, hyper intelligent teen, and you know, you can argue, fine, people can argue like, oh, teenagers are like that, and that's fine. But I don't think that's sort of the general experience of being a teenager. So they're very, like, hyper-aware and memorize poetry and, you know, all this stuff. That's great. But, yeah, I think for me that's the kind of standout from these kids is, like, that's not what being a teenager is like. Like, they kind of seem too, I don't know, they seem too sort of put together and like obviously yes, it's all a facade and they really have no idea what's going on and they make it up with these metaphors of like cigarettes and Alfred Prufrock and like whatever. But at the same time you're kind of like, really? Is this really a book about 16-year-olds? Because it kind of doesn't read like it. I don't know what you guys thought.
No, and that's kind of my experience with the book, and I think that's where I get a little hung up with the book sometimes, is I work with teenagers on a daily basis. Like, I teach, so this is what I do all day long, and I don't know a single teenager that acts or talks the way that these characters do. I mean, glimpses of it here and there, but not to the extent of what we see as these characters, and I think for a realistic fiction kind of book, it sometimes strays off the path of what teenagers are realistically, in a sense. I mean, I'm not saying teenagers are smart, they're funny, they're enjoyable, but sometimes I feel like these characters are at a whole different level that we don't really see in the real world. But that's just me and the experiences I've had. It's not to say that they don't exist or that these aren't real people, in a sense, but it's just not something I've experienced with, and like I said, I teach, so I see a lot of teenagers because I teach high school. So it's kind of where it's at for me. But again, it makes the story enjoyable and they are the story. It's the story of who they are and what they're going through and their experiences. So they're kind of at the heart of the story, whether they're
Right.
hyper intelligent or not, or they're realistic to our experiences or not. So
Yeah, part of me feels like it kind of doesn't matter, but I think it's worth pointing out when you're reading it. It's definitely something that you notice. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
it doesn't really affect the story one way or the other. I don't think it really affects your enjoyment. The only way it would is if, like, maybe for you and I, Jen, it sort of draws you out of the story a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys because I remembered reading it and thinking like everybody sort of seemed like a different version of the same character because they were all super intelligent and they were all really sarcastic and witty. And I kept thinking like, okay, I can sort of expect like Hazel and Gus to be these cynical, very intelligent people. Like that wasn't, out of the norm. But then everybody else sort of seemed to be the same way. And I was like, this really isn't super realistic. And it does sort of draw you out of the book a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to like hate all over the book. People will get mad. Part of it is like enjoyable to read. I mean, it's not fun to read characters that are boring or spend, the whole time, oh, I'm like working out my life, but I don't really know what's going on, so I'm just going to be uninteresting and here, read my thoughts for 200 pages. Like that is not a good read. So it's enjoyable to read it, and I think some of the dialogue that he gives the characters, even though it does seem maybe too mature or too sort of put together for the age that they're representing, or even just like people in general, I just don't think people are that put together. But some of the dialogue he gives them is really great, like is really beautiful, some of the phrases that he writes. So, I can kind of give him that one. If he's going to give me like some really beautiful phrase, I'll be like, okay, fine, you can have your, hyper precocious, intelligent children. That's whatever.
That's true. I think that's the one thing that's amazing about John Green's writing is the levels or the layers that he puts into the writing. Because there's so much you can take away from the book when you're reading it. There's so many different layers, there's so many metaphors, and it's not overkill, but it does add these depths of layer to the story that you don't always get in YA novels. So I appreciate that and what he can do with that. So I always find that really interesting because I think there's lots of different meanings to his book depending on what kind of reader you are and what you pick up on and what you don't pick up on. So I think that that's always appreciated and it's always interesting because so many teens will pick up on things that even as an adult I may have missed because I just wasn't looking to read it that way. So I think it's great that his novels can be read with lots of different eyes and lots of different like views of depending on how someone takes what's already on the page.
Yeah, it's like it's a very highly constructed novel, and I think all of his are, and it's very evident that he's put a lot of thought into like the character names and the places and the various things that he gets them to say and the reoccurring symbols and all of these things. Like, nothing is thoughtless, you know, and in some ways that's a good thing because, like you said, you get all these great layers and it means you can really delve into the book. And, you know, on the other side, maybe it feels a little bit inorganic because it does feel so highly constructed, but I think that's just something that sort of goes along with his writing.
Yeah, that's kind of just his style, so.
Yeah.
So, Karen, what do you think about any comments on that?
I loved his style. Like I said, I was not expecting the book to be as funny as it was. And this is my very first John Green book, so I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't have any, like, preconceptions going into it. And I was really impressed, and I would definitely pick up, you know, any of his other books.
Well, that's good, because they're pretty similar in style.
This is true.
Well, they are. Like, he has a very defined style, I think.
He has, like, a niche that he writes in. That's, like, his home base, you know?
Yeah, and I don't dislike it, but it's probably not my, like, favorite thing to read. And that's fine. I think what he does really well is dialogue. And I think some of the conversations in the book are, like, the funniest parts of it. And even though the interactions that are happening are, like, way too funny and the characters are way too witty, that definitely wouldn't happen. You sort of don't care because it is really, really funny. And, like, Hazel is a great character. I think she's a great character to read. She's really interesting. So this, I do really like this book for everything that I've said.
And that's high praise coming from Marima, everyone. You should take note.
Yeah.
What did you guys...
Someone write that down.
Yeah, someone... Mark the time. What did you guys think of Isaac and his role in the whole story? No thoughts on Isaac? Or can you guys not hear me?
Sorry, I was coughing.
Oh, it's okay. I'm like, oh.
I'm letting Karen speak.
I liked Isaac. I thought it was really interesting, you know, his character and his relationship with Hazel and everything, because you sort of expect there to be some sort of romantic interest or something like that between these two characters, because they are a bit closer than, you know, Hazel is with some other people. But it didn't happen like that. I mean, they're just friends, and I really, really enjoyed that because you don't see that a whole lot. You know, we get a lot of love triangles and stuff in stories. And I mean, his character's kind of tragic because his girlfriend dumps him when he goes blind. And I was like, wow, you're a really horrible person. And I felt really bad for Isaac, but I really liked him.
Yeah, I think Isaac is maybe my favorite character in the book. I think he's the most interesting because, like you said, Karen, he is this sort of super tragic character. Like, he's blind at 16 and, you know, his girlfriend dumps him, and there's that great scene where he breaks all the trophies and he gets really mad. I really like that scene. But then at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, well, everyone has read the book at this point. So, you know, at the end of the novel, Gus has died, and it's fairly clear that Hazel is also going to die pretty soon. But Isaac is kind of, like, he has the ability to outlive them all because he's got rid of the cancer, and in the process, he's lost his sight. So you kind of get this feeling that, like, he's this really damaged character, but at the same time, he has a lot of hope in his, like, I guess in his future, which was really interesting to me, that, like, he chose to make him, because kind of this middleman between Hazel and Gus at points. And yeah, I don't know why his character is so interesting to me, but I just really like him. He always stood out to me the first time I read the book, and it was the same this time.
Actually, I was reading up on some stuff that John Green had said, and he said Isaac is kind of like, you know, in like epics where they have the person who tells the story. So he's basically the person left to tell the story of Hazel and Gus.
Yeah, exactly. He's
like
kind of like in Hamlet.
Yeah.
He's like in Hamlet, everyone's dead. And then except for like the cousin, and he's like, well, this is what happened when everyone else arrived.
Yeah, so this is basically he's the one left to tell the story of Hazel and Gus.
Yeah, which is kind of sad. Tragically sad.
Yeah, it is. Right. It is.
But it's super interesting at the same time.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I liked Isaac as a character for a lot of different reasons. He was very enjoyable.
So what about the author?
What do you mean, what
about... I don't know how to pronounce
his name. Oh, Houghton, or however you say his last name?
Houghton. Houghton. But let's just say all of them, and then we'll get at least one of them right.
I mean, yeah, he is an interesting character, and, you know, he had a purpose, so I don't know. It's hard to kind of reconcile this man and the idea that she was so obsessed with his book. Do you know what I mean? Like, what made it such an amazing book that one would be so obsessed with it?
Well, you sort of wonder, or maybe I just wondered, if that was a little bit of John Green being like, stop asking me what happens at the end of my books. Like, putting into this, because I am sure that happens to him all the time. And, you know, maybe that's enough to drive you crazy if you don't want to answer those kinds of questions. That wasn't really the point of the author's character, but I did think that was, like, an interesting thing that he placed such an emphasis on that.
That's true. I didn't notice that when I read. Interesting. I also read the book, like, a year ago, so, like, I read it right when it came out.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of parallels between not only, like, the author of the book and John Green, but the book and the story and this book, too. I thought it, like, did a lot of the same things that Hazel really loved about the book that she was reading. And as I was reading it, because I don't really know anything about John Green, and I was wondering, if, like, there was supposed to be these parallels between the author of the book and the story and John Green, and I was just like, well, I hope he's not really like the guy from the book, because that would be horrible, because he's really not a very good guy.
Oh, I'm sure he's not, but like, I'm sure he was aware of the parallels that he was writing in there, because I think they're quite noticeable. I mean, I guess the whole point of that author is it's kind of not about him, it's about the book that finishes without an ending. And Hazel, the reason she wants to meet him is because she wants to know the ending so badly, because she doesn't know the ending to her own story. And, you know, what really sticks out is she wants to know what happens to the mother in the book, because she wants to know what's going to happen to her own mother when she dies. And that's really sad. Like, I always thought that was really sad, that was the thing. And, you know, there are heaps of parallels you can draw between the Imperial Affliction and the Fault in Our Stars. But there's one description when Hazel first talks about the book, and she says, like, you know, sometimes books you just want to keep for yourself, and sometimes you want to share them with the world. And, you know, she's talking about this sort of feeling like a kind of zealot about your favorite book. And I thought that was such a great description. And I remembered that from the first time, because I don't know if you guys have a book like that, but I definitely have a book like that, that I just like adore. It's like seared into my soul. And I'm stuck between being like, everyone read this book, and at the same time being like, I just want it to be all mine. So I always really liked that description when she was talking about it. So maybe for me it's not so difficult to understand that, like, obsession with a book, but maybe I'm just weird. So that's also a possibility.
No, I definitely see where you're coming from. I think they're, you know, for people who love to read as much as we do, there are definitely books out there that you're just like, you know, you want it to stay yours because you've been invested in it for so long.
Right. It's kind of a book about books as well as about lots of other things. There's so many themes. Oh my God, it's like an English class in here.
Yes, it is. So do you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about from The Fault in Our Stars?
Karen? Oh, no.
I don't think so.
No, I think I'm good. Although I will say, Karen, if you haven't read any other John Green, my favorite John Green book is Will Grayson, Will Grayson, that he wrote with David Levithan. That's a really great book. So I would recommend you get on that one next.
Cool. I will add it to my list.
And we should also note at this point, The Fault in Our Stars is being made into a movie. It's actually going to start filming in a couple of weeks. And it's cast Shailene Woodley, surprise, surprise, along with, I'm going to say, Ansel Elgort.
I think that's how you say it, Ansel Elgort.
Ansel Elgort. And he's actually...
And,
Nat Wolff just got cast as
right,
Isaac.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
I think that's great casting. He looks really great.
Yeah, I think that... And Laura Dern is set to play, I believe, Hazel's mom.
Yeah.
So those are the only four cast at the moment, but clearly more casting information will be coming forth shortly because the movie's going to start to film, so they'll have to release that information or people will start seeing random actors on set and be able to go like, hey, so-and-so. So Ansel Elgort and Shailene Woodley are also both in Divergent, which I always find so amusing when, like, the casting stuff crosses over that way. But from what I understand, when Shailene and Ansel read together, it was just kind of like magic. So it should be really interesting to see that on the screen when it comes out. I'm not sure if it's going to be a late 2014 or an early 2015 release on that yet.
They're saying 2015 at the moment.
Yeah, they pushed it because originally I thought they were saying 2014, so...
Yeah, I think they have pushed it. It's not like it needs lots of post-production or anything,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, I know. It's been that odd. And, I mean, they're starting... See, on IMDb, it still says 2014.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a scheduling thing
or
something.
Yeah. I do know that they're...
She is filming, like, 400 different movies right now, so...
Yeah, but she's filming this one next month, so...
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. I know they're going to Amsterdam to film as well, which I think is really interesting. So they will... Yeah. It'll be very authentic, this film.
I think she could be a good Hazel. I can see that.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think she could definitely pull it off. I think it's just hard for people to separate her from everything else that she's doing. Because she's been cast in so much lately. And she's so, like, in the front of everyone's mind. Because she got cast as Trish. And then she was cast as Mary Jane. And then was cut as Mary Jane. And then, you know, so it's just kind of in your face at the moment. And it's hard to reconcile, I think, when someone's so much in front of the camera as different people. All kind of at the same time, and they're all very literary, you know, characters that everyone really knows well. It's hard to see one person fit all of those roles at once. So I think that's kind of the hang-up.
I think fans are very protective of this book as well, so I don't know if they'll ever be happy. I mean, I think there's a certain group of fans that are never going to be happy with the whoever they choose.
And I think that's way for all books. I mean, I think that's
I think so, but maybe
are very protective.
The Fault in Our Stars fans are maybe just slightly more vocal about it because, like, the entire fandom is on Tumblr, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
Well, I also think it's a significantly bigger fandom because it's a John Green fandom. It's not necessarily a book-specific fandom, which makes it a little bit different just, like, a book fandom kind of thing. Like, Game of Thrones is about the book, not necessarily about George R.R. Martin, whereas this is about John Green, not necessarily about an individual book. But that's the vibe I get from it, at least.
I guess so. But also, like, you have to remember, The Fault in Our Stars was, like, this huge breakout hit. Like, it was Time's Book of the Year and everything. So, you know, it seems like it's kind of crossed a lot of boundaries. Although I can't imagine that the sort of people that are reading Time are the same people that are, like, going crazy about casting on Tumblr. So... Who knows?
No, that makes sense. It was also, oddly enough, I think it's John Green, the first book that John Green hit the number one spot in the New York Times bestselling list with, oddly enough. It was really strange.
But I think then, like, didn't...
Then everything hit. Yeah.
All his books went back
all
in.
All of his backlist went on the list, so yeah.
You know, it did the job, right?
I think part of not the success necessarily, but the interest in the book was for the nerd fighting community. There was a girl that John was fairly close to, and her name was Esther. And this is not the story of Esther that John has made that very, very clear, but it's a story about cancer, which is, you know, what inevitably took Esther's life in the end. So I think that there's also a very personal level to it for many, many readers out there. So
yeah,
I think that
there's lots of layers.
Yeah,
like an onion.
Exactly. Well, you're going for it today, aren't you? Okay, so that pretty much wraps up our discussion about The Fault in Our Stars. So if you guys have any questions, comments, there should be no hate mail this week. I think we did okay. But as always, you can send that to Marima.
Hey. Yeah, okay,
but
bye.
you can reach us at our Book Hype Twitter, which is at Book Hype. You can leave comments on any of the posts on Book Hype, and we love to respond and talk to you guys about it. If you have any suggestions about topics that we should be covering on Book Hype, please feel free to leave them in the comments of our Book Hype podcast. We do read through those, so we are happy to talk about what you guys are interested in. And our next Book Hype book club book, that's way too many books, is going to be The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, aka J.K. Rowling.
Trolling.
Yeah, that too. We will be reading that next, and that'll be a couple weeks off so that everyone has time to read it because I haven't read it yet. So
I've read it.
I know you're so
Oh.
good.
Oh my God, read my review on Hypebol. Get mad because I didn't give it an A plus. Yay!
Oh man.
So you guys can prepare yourself by reading the review and write your mean comments and then tweet them at us as well. That would be lovely. I'm just kidding. I know that Book Hype listeners only leave very nice comments.
It's true for the most part. They are, which is awesome. And we appreciate your comments, by the way. Don't think that we don't read them or don't notice them, because we do. And we love them. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. And like I said, if you have any suggestions about future Book Hype episodes of things that you would be interested in, just let us know and we will do our best to cover them. So thanks for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Marama.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.